From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today On Deadline is looking at an upcoming Supreme Court ruling that could affect America's homeless population. The case could rewrite rules to prevent homeless encampments, something that has taken root in large cities across the United States, including San Francisco, Los Angeles, Chicago, and New York. On Monday, the United States Supreme Court heard arguments in a case brought by homeless residents in Grants Pass, Oregon, a small town that stops people from sleeping in public with, quote, bedding. Under the state law in force now, those who don't move along in Grants Pass once they're cited face a $295 fine. Sometimes their belongings are confiscated or thrown away. The city argues that its ordinance is not targeting homeless people, since it is in effect for everyone. However, critics of the ordinance argue that the only people sleeping on sidewalks are the homeless. Now the Supreme Court has to decide if the ordinance amounts to cruel and unusual punishment, which is banned by the Eighth Amendment. While opponents say that it does, the city is arguing that the amendment was meant to prohibit torture or hard labor sentences, not tickets handed out by police. They also argue that homelessness is a matter of public safety and public health, which it claims are not constitutional matters for the courts to decide. Adam Murray, the CEO of the Inner City Law Center in Los Angeles, joined Odyssey to share more on the case.
Johnson versus the City of Grants Pass case, which is currently in front of the Supreme Court, arose because the City of Grants Pass in Oregon does not have enough shelter beds for everyone who lives there. And so they passed a series of laws with the explicit intention of forcing those folks who didn't have a place to sleep in their city to move on down the road, was the phrase that was used by the city council president at the time, and basically outlawed sleeping in their city, sleeping in cars, sleeping in tents or on sidewalks or in parks. And the Ninth Circuit, following a series of cases that they had previously held and ruled in, held that that was a violation of the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, that it was cruel and unusual punishment to tell people that they could not sleep in a public place when literally there did not exist a place for them to sleep elsewhere in the city. That decision is what is now being appealed to the Supreme Court and what the Supreme Court will hear.
Does it come down to, I mean, am I simplifying it too much in thinking of it this way? If a city is going to pass any kind of camping restrictions on sidewalks or streets, they have to have enough shelter beds available to provide for the estimated homeless population in that city. Is it just that simple, or is there more to it?
There's actually more to it than that. It's not as clear-cut as that, and it's not as draconian as that. You would think that it was what you just said based on all the sound and fury that various elected officials are saying, you know, their hands are tied and this is awful. But if you actually look at what the Ninth Circuit has required, and if you look at what other courts have taken that ruling and done with it, cities still have a lot of discretion about what to do. So, for example, there are cities, Oakland, for example, in Northern California, there's a couple of cases out of there, there's a case out of Hawaii, all in the last couple of years, where courts in the Ninth Circuit have said cities can restrict where people sleep, when they sleep, in the public space, so long as there are some places for people to sleep. So you can fix the problem by having enough shelter beds, like some places have done, and that's would be a great solution. But even if you don't do that, you can still restrict some public areas and some public parks and some sidewalks within cities, as long as there are alternative places where people can sleep. So it is not an absolute ban on sleeping in public or sleeping in parks, but there has to be an alternative. There has to be a place where people can sleep. And so in places like Oakland and places like Kauai, where there are alternative parks and other places where people can sleep, even if they're not shelter beds, the courts have said that can be sufficient.
What then do you think is behind the complaining of a lot of city officials that the Ninth Circuit ruling has tied their hands? And what do you think then is behind cities who have been quite abrasive toward this Ninth Circuit ruling? And again, that argument, well, our hands are tied.
Yeah, I think it's a lack of political will. It's a lack of creativity and just willingness to get to the heart of this problem, which is we don't have enough housing or shelter in our communities. And those are difficult questions for elected officials to deal with because their constituents, for the most part, want the problem solved, but they want it solved someplace else. They don't want the shelter in their neighborhood. They don't want the additional affordable housing in their neighborhood. And so we're not seeing a lot of courage, a lot of political leadership, a lot of creativity from our elected officials, and there are certainly exceptions, but saying to their constituents, look, we are all going to have to pitch in and solve this problem. Instead, it's a lot easier to say, oh my gosh, you know, we can't solve this problem because the evil Ninth Circuit has said we can't punish people if there's no place for them to sleep in our city.
The case comes as the number of unhoused individuals across the country continues to grow. According to a report from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, in just 1 year, from 2022 to 2023, the homeless population in the U.S. rose 12%. The report also found that more than 650,000 people in the United States are unhoused. It also highlighted that 40% of them do not have shelter that's considered adequate. Whatever way you look at this case, it could have ripple effects for the way our nation looks at homelessness. To share more on the impact this case could have on the nation, Joe Garofoli, senior political writer at the San Francisco Chronicle, joined Odyssey.
So let's talk about what's going on now in Grants Pass when it comes to the homeless. They are banned from camping in public, correct?
Well, they have to move every 3 days. So every 3 days, police officers there, they have a couple officers assigned to the homeless there. They come through and they say, well, you have 3 days, and they put up a notice. They'll knock on everybody's tent, if you will, sometimes, and say you have 3 days to move. And so if they don't, they could face a $295 ticket. That could increase. And if they don't pay it, then perhaps they will either be banned from the park for 30 days or face jail time. And homeless advocates say this violates the Eighth Amendment prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment.
It is just such a complicated legal morass, which is the definition of morass, I should say. But Monday, things could change because that's when, as you write, unhoused residents there will hear give arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court. Tell us where we've been, beginning in 2018 and then 2022 and now to Monday.
Yeah, it began in 2018. The Ninth Circuit of Appeals said that local governments couldn't make it a crime to sleep on a public street or a sidewalk when there's no homeless shelters were available. And in 2022, they went a step further, said Grants Pass couldn't prohibit, you know, things like the homeless from using blankets or punish them from opposing these fines that we talked about a couple of minutes ago. And Grants said a couple of things about Grants Pass. I mean, many people might, you know, Californians might know where it is. It's about an hour north of the California border. It's a city of about 40,000, and its population has doubled over the last two decades. And many things are happening there that'll sound familiar to hear. They didn't build enough or really any affordable housing or multifamily housing. Rents and have gone up, and housing prices have gone up. A lot of people have been forced into the streets, and there's no homeless shelter in town. A low barrier homeless shelter. There's one shelter there, but it's a Christian-run shelter. Folks come in who could come in aren't allowed to smoke or bring their partners or pets, and they have to attend the Christian chapel services twice a day. Many of the homeless folks I talked to, they said, well, that's kind of a deal breaker for me.
And here's another thing. The increased homeless population in the U.S. came at a time when prices were sky high, from the grocery store to Zillow and everywhere in between. With inflation making it nearly impossible to live like people did just a decade ago, many people are wondering, whatever happened to the American dream? Is that dream now just a wish? Economist Alan Nevin joined Odyssey to give an update on the American dream and what could now be considered the new normal.
Well, when we're looking at the point that people are making, in some cases, 2 to 3 times the minimum wage, and that is not enough to live on in this current society and enough to maintain, how do we start looking at the sunny side of this? Where's the upside of the fact that we seem to be going upside down in most of what we do? And even in rental properties, you're ending up renting for the cost of almost a mortgage payment, and but people can't afford a full-on mortgage. They're kind of in this strange bubble of not knowing what to do or where to go.
First of all, I think that there are various places in the United States where the prices are still rational. Now, I'm in San Diego, where nothing is rational. But the reality is that most places have maintained rational rents. You know, when I look at inflation, people talk of inflation being, 7 or 8%. The reality is, for most Americans, their monthly payments, or whether it's a mortgage or rent, insurance, car payments, property tax, these are all fixed. They're not inflationary. They don't go up 7 or 8% a year. What does go up, as we all know, is food and consumables that are optional. So the inflation isn't really as bad as people say it is. Now, if you're at the bottom end of the scale, that's not true. But for the vast majority of Americans, inflation isn't that big a factor in their lives.
But we're also living in a country that's now overwhelmed in debt. A lot of people are doing these things, and then they're getting way in over their heads, thinking things are going to correct. Hey, interest rates are going to get lowered again. I can go back in and renegotiate on my home, and interest rates aren't dropping. Things aren't changing to make it easier.
Well, but when you look at car sales, you'll see that the interest rates that you're paying on new cars are typically below 3%. Look on every ad on TV, and you'll see 2.9% interest rate. So you can't get much lower than that. Now, the reality is the 50-year average for mortgages in the United States is 7.75%. We have no reason to believe that they're going to go back to that ridiculously small window when rates went down to 3%. And I'm delighted to tell you that I have a 15-year mortgage at 2.3%. That is a fluke, and that's not going to happen again in a long time.
Right, and I think that's what's affecting and worrying people. And it wouldn't be so bad if the interest rates were up, but the housing market was at a more affordable rate, or cars. Listen, yeah, right now you've got these great low interest rates on cars, but cars are more expensive. I mean, there are cars right now that are being released with just the basics that cost as much as my first house cost.
I'm sure of that. Yeah, you know, I find it somewhat amazing that in a lot of the metropolitan areas, particularly coastal areas, people are still overbidding on homes.
Agreed.
Knowing full well that the mortgage rates are 7-ish.
So with house prices out of reach for many people in lower and even middle income brackets, skyrocketing rent, and now attempts to stop people from sleeping in parks when they have nowhere else to turn, where are they supposed to go? Ed Johnson is a legal aid attorney who helped file the 2018 lawsuit against Grants Pass, Oregon that the Supreme Court is now reviewing. He says that giving people a criminal record for sleeping outside just makes it harder to find jobs and therefore the housing they need to escape homelessness. Amber Rockwell is one of the people who camps in Grants Pass. She told Reuters that there's no place for us. We're made to feel like we shouldn't even exist. On the other side, there are residents who want the parks they pay for with tax dollars to be free of drug paraphernalia, feces, public urination, and sometimes worse. Mark Lyon, a 65-year-old homeless man who has camped on and off in Grants Pass for the past 20 years, told Reuters that, looking around, even he can understand where angry residents are coming from. "But I deserve to be someplace," he said. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strauser, and Myron Kaplan. And by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.